Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. Tatum? Okay.
I can hear you, Dr. Lee.
Okay, good. Okay, Robert Harding, can you hear me? Hello? Okay, something's going on.
So I'll be ready. I'll just turn it to Mike. Mike is available, right?
Yeah, Mike is here. We got to figure out. The music hasn't come on yet, so I'm taking advantage of this time, trying to figure out what's going on. Yeah, the music hasn't come on. It was supposed to be automatic, but I don't know if callers can hear us or not. Oh, my goodness, and then I'm having problems with Mr. Harding's line. Okay, so let's see here. Okay, let's see. I don't know. So we'll try to get the music going.
Cornel West. Peace to the movement. Came from the bottom, ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slain. Now we locked up a game, how much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your war. But you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up. Get up, get up. Get up, get up.
Worst case scenario, might work till a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres. Take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb and sit and have your back, have you beat and lost your mind, especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got porn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign, SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime, what it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with the same drugs, selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug
America,
heritage.
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America? I done gave you all that I own, America. Took me from my mama so young, America. Locked me up and gave me your name.
America, 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 you know the black freedom movement. Conscious, you know
we've been trying to redeem the soul of the nation. These leather nations are trying to render us soulless. But we are our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the same banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them and always move forward with grace and dignity.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America, I done gave you all that I own. America, took me from my mama so young. America, locked me up and gave me your name. America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America, I done gave you all that I own. America, took me from my mama so young. America, locked me up and gave me your name.
Man, praise God. We're in for another exciting night with Dr. Mary Lee live coming from the East Coast out of Virginia, emanating in a very powerful area of the nation. We're going to be talking about the 400 years entrepreneurship, but we have a special guest tonight, Robert Harding. That song that you just heard was by Dr. Cornel West back in 2007, the Hidden Beach Records. Talking about America, produced by Corey Coty Tatum, first rapper Iris Zamolin, followed by Rod Digger, Mike Thought, then Dr. Cornel West himself. I'm Dr. Tatum, coming from Los Angeles, California, and we have an exciting lineup, Robert Harding, as I said, and we're going to bring on Mr. Michael Tynes as he introduced Dr. Mary Lee and our special guest. Mr. Tynes, are you with us tonight?
I am, Mr. Tatum. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. The ball is in your court. Of course, sir.
All right. Appreciate you. Thank you for that introduction. So as Dr. Tatum said, tonight we're going to be having a very interesting show relating to something that I'm particularly interested in, biochemistry as it pertains to the food we eat in our body, the food we take into our body. And we have a special guest, Mr. Robert Harding, who is a biochemist and founder of RST Bioscience, to talk about just that topic. But before we get into the show, I'll just say that my name is Michael. I operate as an advocate for global African independence and empowerment. I speak on African affairs, African history, and African people on behalf of the global African diaspora to increase education and accelerate this process that we have of growth, development, and empowerment as an African people. But before we get into the main topic for tonight, I want to bring on Dr. Mary Lee. Dr. Mary Lee, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much. I want to welcome everyone. So happy that you could join us tonight. And we do have a very important discussion tonight and regarding our food. So I want to thank you all so much. I want to remind our listening audiences, when you have any comments or questions, you want to tap 1 on your telephone. And we will open up your lines. Before we get started, I do want to confirm that Mr. Robert Harding is here. So, Mr. Harding, can you hear me?
Yes,
hello.
I can hear you. Can you hear me? Hello,
yes,
can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. We can hear you just fine. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Well, we can't get started tonight, thank you, without acknowledging that, you know, we have a historic moment where we had, for the very first time, a police officer being held accountable for his actions and being found guilty of all counts, in all counts. And so I'm thankful for that, and I recognize and that this is just really, you know, the beginning. This is long time overdue. But what's so interesting is that we don't even get a chance to breathe before we have another killing, even before this verdict was read on yesterday afternoon. We had a 16-year-old killed by a police officer, which it's just more confirmation that we really as a people gonna need to continue to step up our own game. We feel that we should organize a lot more than what we are and take some actions. I have my opinions about some of the type of actions that we should take. But before we get started, although I know we're here to talk about food, I'm just going to ask Michael, as a young person, what do we need to do? How, even though we've had this decision on yesterday, or this verdict on yesterday, we still don't know, you know, how it's going to, the sentencing is going to play out. We know that he can get up to, 12 and a half years is what they're saying, average. But a black person would get this full practically 75 years maximum. So what's your opinion, Michael?
I definitely was, for what it's worth, you know, as you said, you don't know how far this is actually going to go, whether or not they're going to make an appeal, but I definitely was at least grateful for something that resembled a modicum of progress. Obviously, as you mentioned, he was Derek Chauvin, the officer charged with killing George Floyd, was charged and found guilty of all three charges, second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. As far as what do we do to, or where do we go from here? To be quite honest, I think we have to invest more in policing our own communities. So you have to bring that old thing back from the Black Panther days, which means whether you like it or not, you know, exercising your Second Amendment constitutional right, as much as you see the likes of Fox News and other conservatives harp on about that Africans should be doing that as well. Even if you don't, you know, whatever your opinions on gun ownership are, I think that you should still position yourself in an environment where there are other African Americans who are exercising their Second Amendment constitutional right, if you're not at the very least. Also, you need a lot more, I'll say, financial investment in things like super PACs, because what we see from voting is that voting in state and local elections is far more powerful and impactful on your personal life than national elections. So you should still do that. But when it comes to, you know, national elections, I would actually still vote, but draw back from voting on the national level, focus more on the state and local, and use your money to, you know, pool it together with other African Americans to actually go after the corporations and say, hey, you know, we as African Americans, we're going to start using our influence to influence things going on the continent of Africa. We're going to start telling African Americans or recommending to them that they shouldn't do business with these companies and they should do business with those companies. And we should say to those corporations, hey, if you want us to, you know, tell them to work with you or to advise them to look at you in a favorable light, what you need to do is start using some of your capital here to get us reparations. I think that's what we need to do moving forward. We should kind of go, we should pull away from Democrats and white leftists and just go straight to the, whether you like them or not. And I have my criticisms, but the people like Jeff Bezos, the people with the actual capital that control the political system, I think black people should directly interface with them and saying, hey, we want some of your capital to get our reparations, and in exchange, we'll do business with you, and we'll be willing to recommend you to Africans on the continent. And you definitely want, you know, the resources of the African continent, and your way to the continent is through us. So if you want to, if you want some good references, so to speak, or, you know, positive reviews, you should do our bidding here. I think that's what we need to do moving forward: police our own communities and start to go to the corporations and work with them to get them to use their capital to fund our empowerment and hop, skip, and jump over the Democratic Party. Especially I don't want to take up too much time, but especially considering, you know, I don't know if any of you heard what Nancy Pelosi said after the sentencing or the trial. And she, you know, thank George Floyd for his quote unquote sacrifice for justice, despite the fact that, you know, obviously it wasn't a sacrifice. He wasn't trying to be a martyr. So that kind of shows you psychologically, you know, what they think of black people. Mm-hmm. Her calling it a sacrifice.
Exactly. So I totally agree. The super PAC, there's so many PACs out there, and there are a few, you know, operated by blacks, However, there aren't any what I would consider extremely strong super PACs now, and with that's taking these kinds of positions and pushing our economy forward to the corporations such as these. How do we organize? I mean, how do we get them? I know how to, you know, corporately, you know, legally organize a super PAC, but how do we get the people? How do we get our people involved?
Media, just like this, exactly what you're doing, Dr. Lee. We need more media presence and people in media positions saying things like I'm saying that, hey, as black people, let's, you know, being regularly, as we do here on this show, every Wednesday, and for some people who watch the TV version, every Thursday or every so Thursday. Let's convene on these shows and talk about what we're actually going to do as a community. We're going to say, hey, now what we're going to do is we're going to put our money together into a PAC to fund the politicians. Behind the scenes, we don't always need to be, you know, when it's warranted, we could be in the streets. I have no problem with that and protesting, but we need to pull back now and start to work behind the scenes like most other groups do and just send our money to work for us. We need to buy out our politicians before someone else buys them, because whether you like it or not, they're all for sale. And right. Also, you know, on these type of shows, we need to push, using media, we need to push this message that I just articulated a couple seconds ago, that we have to move away from, at least on the national level, the Democratic Party and white leftists. We need to be solely focused on our community and start to work with corporations and get them to use their money to fund our agenda in exchange for our positive reviews, if you will, for their company as it pertains to, you know, what Africans on the continent, what companies they should or shouldn't work for, right? We can evaluate these companies and say, okay, that company agrees to, you know, not trying to overstep the ownership of Africans on the continent. They agree to, let's say they'll mine to get resources, but they're not going to employ slave labor. They also agree to not try to pursue ownership, meaning they're going to let the Africans on the continent own the land. All they're going to do is extract it. And they also agreed on paying their taxes. That's a company that we want to do business with. We're going to give the shout out to that company, to the Africans on the continent, and say, hey, do business with them instead of these other guys, because they're doing all these things that they're fulfilling all of our agreements, that they leave ownership alone. Africans own the land and resources there.
Right.
They pay their taxes. They're not using slave labor. They're doing all this stuff, and they're using their money in America to fund African-American reparation efforts. So, hey, do business with them and not this other company. That's what we need to do. We need to spread that message that we have to hop, skip, and jump over the Democratic Party and go straight to the corporations and do business with them as a community.
Directly. Totally agree. Thank you so much, Mr. Harding. We've got Mr. Robert Harding, who is the founder and CEO of RST Bioscience. The RST Bioscience was part of the winning team for Michael Bloomberg's C40 Reinventing Cities competition. They won the right to develop a 300-acre abandoned landfill 8 miles from downtown Houston. There were approximately 70 international teams made up of one or more green companies competed for this honor. All of the finalists were solar projects, just affairs, but their project, RST Bioscience, however, included a community component that features their own AgriHub Community Ag Center, which was created by Mr. Robert Harding. The Community Ag Center will be the first of many such centers that will adopt the landscape of major metropolitan areas, transforming food desert communities into stations of fresh local organic food. And then these urban farms will be owned and operated by people who live right there in the community, where the agri-hubs will be located. And these are planned really globally all over the world. The urban farmers will get training, technical support, and a lot of ancillary support services from the agri-hub. The agri-hub will boost profitability of the urban farms within the network and will expand organically and integrate the entire supply chain through its online mega store. So welcome, Mr. Harding. And you chose your topic tonight as starving to death with a mouth full of food. What do you mean by that, sir? And welcome. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Harding.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for having me tonight, Dr. Lee. I appreciate it. And the topic was chosen because the lack of awareness of what's happening with our food is really a dangerous state to be in. First of all, our first line of defense against any disease, whether it be infectious disease or neurological or genetic disease, any kind of disease at all, is our immune system, which fights off disease naturally. But it can only do so if it's really getting everything it needs to be strong and effective, and that means good, nutritious food, something that is becoming more and more difficult to get for everyone these days, especially people in the inner cities. The problem really is the way the food is grown these days. Food has to be grown in a situation where the life in the soil can actually be an agent to transfer the nutrition into the food from the earth. Without living creatures that live in the soil, microorganisms that live in the soil, the transfer of nutrient into the food itself is very, very substandard or subpar, just not effective at all. So these live microorganisms in the soil are really essential to grow good quality food. And the way that we produce food in most of the world now, especially in these big mega farms particularly, destroys those same microorganisms that are responsible for making the food high-quality, nutrient-dense food. When you do that by certain acts like tilling the soil, putting synthetic fertilizers and pesticides, herbicides, all these things are really killing the life in the soil. And as that happens more and more, and food is grown in this type of soil more and more over time, the nutrient density in the food is declining. It's been declining for decades. And if you look at some of the rise in a lot of diseases that were not nearly as prevalent in recent decades, a few decades ago, they're becoming more and more abundant, and especially in communities where the nutritional value of the food is exceptionally poor. You can make a correlation with the quality of food and the illness and the diabetes and the heart disease and obesity all on the rise. As a matter of fact, since we keep in records, the average lifespan of a person living in America has been increasing until the last 10 years or so. It starts to level off and taper more and more. Now it's on a decline. We're living less lengthy lives than our parents today. And it's the first time that's ever been the situation. Another thing that can be correlated back to poor nutrient value of the food that we intake. We have to understand how the food is grown, where it's grown. We need to know where our food is coming from to even have a chance.
Yeah.
Organically grown food, in the absence of pesticides, herbicides, especially if it's not in ground that has been over-tilled, can be really, really nutrient-dense and really, really good for you. It usually is. So it's not the food that's at fault. It's the way we grow it. And I don't really have any comment on GMO stuff. That's really not, as far as I'm concerned, the jury is really out on how that food's going to maintain the human health. I don't see any evidence that it's really helping us turn the situation around with our poor quality food. It just gets worse and worse. So, tonight I want to talk about what we can do about it more than anything else. The problem is kind of well-known. It's poorly understood in many cases, but it's well-known. And those who understand the power of organic farming know that it can be turned around. food doesn't even taste like it did in the past, because the fact that our taste buds have evolved to follow nutrition, that helps us to survive as a species. When we eat what's good for us naturally and it tastes good for us, we continue to seek it out and continue to consume those things that are good for us because they taste good. You know, not knowing that we're really just doing things that naturally support our health. Most herbs, actually, that we use to cook with also have a role in natural medicine. You know, sage, oregano, as delicious long mints, et cetera. All these herbs have real powerful medicinal properties. Turmeric, oh, my God. It's a tremendous anti-inflammatory. There's so many things that we can eat that's good for our bodies. Moringa. A lot of things that are out there that can be cultivated to deliver this kind of nutrition that will help us boom at our peak, really strong and healthy, and living long and prosperous lives are available to us, so we just don't grow our own food anymore. And that was a tremendous mistake in our culture to let that tradition get away from us. We're suffering for it now. We can turn it around. And even though we live in cities now instead of back on the farm like our grandparents, great-grandparents did, farming has evolved now to where farming in the city is possible on a small scale. There's ways to grow vertically that didn't exist in previous generations. We can grow a lot of food in a small space because you're not growing it just in on the ground per se, but you're growing it in like planters that go up like a tree. And you're going all along these vertical columns and towers. They have trays that sit on the rack that go from, you know, 2 feet all the way up to 6 or 7 feet as high as you can reach, where you have shelves and shelves of, like, organic microgreens. There's tons of ways to grow in urban centers now where you can grow good quality nutritious food, because those same microorganisms that live in the soil that allow us to make food nutrient-dense when we grow it in the ground can exist in places where there really is no soil, water, for example. Aquaponics, hydroponics, all these techniques can produce good quality nutritious food if we just avoid some of the poisons that kill the little microbes that make our food really good for us. You can grow very well in, especially aquaponics. It can be very nutrient-dense food. Once we start to replace nutrition that's missing in our diet, I think we can go a long way towards healing our communities in more than just physical health and absence of disease. This things having to do with nutrition involve mental illness as well, and you know, instability, and certainly a man who doesn't have access to enough food is dangerous a person to be around, because he's going desperate people are dangerous. But our food is not our problem is not so much not having enough food. There's food. But it's such a poor quality food, it doesn't give us the armor we need to protect ourselves against the disease and just maintain our health, help us feel strong and healthy and energetic so we can go out and do things and accomplish things. It's essential. It's the most fundamental thing that people can do for themselves and their families is to eat good quality food, to grow strong and healthy. There's products on the market that you can use, or you can even create your own systems in community soil also, but the soil has to be clean. It has to be taken care of. And there's things that you can do like composting and make it full of nutrients and those microorganisms that can help the food to become really, really good for you again. Growing in these kind of situations, even in the city, like, in, for example, in raised bed gardens can be very productive and can create excellent food product in this fashion in an urban center. You can do it indoors with grow lights sometimes if you have access to that kind of technology. There's several greenhouses that operate in city limits. They produce large amounts of fresh organic vegetables because they go with techniques that are free of the types of things that destroy the microbes and make the food good for us. So there's answers and solutions to these issues, but we have to really take a proactive stance. I would venture to suggest that the churches could take the lead on this. In inner city communities, churches tend to have property, raw land in many cases, that could be developed, or buildings in where they can be developed into urban indoor growing rooms or gardens, inside, outside. And with the weather being such that it is, climate change and all these severe weather events that can destroy food that's exposed to the elements, certainly it is advantageous to grow indoors more than it ever has been in the past, whose security is being threatened globally right now for a number of reasons to do with, well, climate change and the way we grow food and the fact that our food system is based on a commodities kind of model that requires large, huge farms to produce copious amounts of food to feed people that live far away in cities. That's definitely not sustainable. Moving that food from those rural areas where you have these giant farms to cities can be very costly, make the price of food go up, put a lot of pollution in the air, just driving the food back and forth, flying it or taking it in boats, however it gets there. It involves usually burning of fossil fuels, which is not helping our atmosphere. But even more than that, these big farms, they use these techniques that kill all the microbes in the soil. And then when you kill those microbes, that's a lot of carbon that was in the soil that basically decomposes and it ends up being CO2 in the atmosphere too. People don't understand that it's not just cars that put pollution into the atmosphere. As an industry, farming is a bigger contributor to atmospheric carbon than the automobile industry. Yes, it's largely all things taken, forestry, farming, gardening, these giant agribusinesses and whatnot. If you take it as a whole, the contribution to putting carbon in the air and making this global warming situation even worse is bigger from agriculture than it is from any other industry. And that's terrible. You have to add to that also the fact that we destroy so many species where we farm just by destroying their habitat, destroying their little homes, animals, birds. We destroyed over 20% of the life forms on the surface just because of the way we grow our food. That's a travesty. These are species that have evolved through billions of years. They cannot be replaced. Once they're gone for good. And that is just a tremendous crime. It's all because we're not conscious of how we grow our food. We've let our natural systems, our local organic kind of traditions just kind of go away, deteriorate. They've been replaced by these big agribusinesses that don't really do things that, you know, our forefathers and ancestors did. They took care of the land. Smaller farms are easier to accommodate in the environment. Our farmers used to compost, things like that. Make sure that the food had good, rich soil. Plant in places where the soil was excellent instead of trying to supplement it with artificial things that cannot replace natural organic fertilizers. It makes the food look good. It may even make it taste okay, but it's not going to be what it should be for your body. And it leaves us all at a disadvantage day to day. Going through life undernourished is something that can cause you problems you may not be able to identify, but they're just as real as any other problems you might have. I remember when I was a younger man, I hadn't heard much about autism. You know, autism. Now it's so many children are considered autistic, and I can see a difference in the way these children behave. Actually, I'm a teacher, or was for several years, and the behavior of the children is not the same as it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It's changed quite a bit, and not for the better, I have to say. And, you know, our behavior is tied to nutrition, too, so we have to really look at this hard. We have a lot of ground to make up in terms of our place in this country. But if we have to start in our communities, we have to start in our own backyards, in our own kitchens, taking control of our food. No people, I don't care where they are, who they are, what they are, can ever claim to be a free people if they don't control the production and distribution of their own food. Even if it hasn't been leveraged against them people, if somebody else controls your food, they could do it anytime they got ready. And what would you do if you can't feed yourself? It means you're at a tremendous disadvantage socially, as a people. And it's just and that's not sustainable either, because eventually, you know, as things get, you know, more difficult in different ways, people will do different things to take advantage of the situation. And we have to be prepared to take care of ourselves under any circumstances as Black people. If we don't have our own control, our own food, we're not even getting to the starting line. You know, a gun is cool and everything, but, you know, a real good collard green can do a lot more for you sometimes, you know, or for your family. For you. The nutrition is the foundation of all. Without that, we don't have a chance.
Absolutely.
Our people
Well, you are what you eat, literally, chemically.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Now, the government system has taken control over the production of our food. I mean, everything, the growing of the food. I mean, what do we do? How do we take it back? We have to take everything to FDA. It has to be approved.
They haven't outlawed the growing of food in this country yet. I say yet because, you know, stranger things have happened. But right now, if you want to start a garden, you can start a garden. We should all have gardens. We used to all our grandmothers used to have gardens. Grandmothers used to have gardens. I can't think of anybody in my age group whose grandmother didn't have a garden. We fed ourselves, took care of ourselves, especially because, you know, things were harder for them financially, so they had to make sure they had what they needed, and they could do a lot of that for themselves. You know, my great-grandmother was famous for never turning anyone away who was hungry. You know, she was very active in the community, and she always had an open door for people who were hungry and needed something to eat, because she could cook, and she had a huge garden behind her house. And it was always kept up. It was always growing stuff. In the winter, she had winter fruits and vegetables. In the summertime, you know, she had, you know, tons of, you know, all the great summer vegetables that people love so much. Well, with collard greens and carrots and turnips and stuff in the wintertime, there was always something growing year-round. We always had food. My mom and them always were healthy and strong, excellent athletes and scholars. But, you know, without the good quality food, none of that would have been possible. So we have to get back to basics, and we can grow food in the cities now. We don't have to have the permission of the government to start a garden. We can start gardens in our schools, we can start gardens in our yards, we can start gardens in our living rooms. I grow food on my porch in front and the back right now because I can do aquaponics and hydroponics vertically. You know, I grow enough. I got to go and buy vegetables one time a year in the spring. I put them in my aquaponics system, herbs especially, because they just keep growing. They don't have any real food like cilantro and green onions, chives, lettuces, and things like that. I go buy vegetables once a year and put them in my aquaponics system, and they just grow back. I eat off of them, and I eat something else next time and something else the next time. It's growing back, and they just keep going and growing. I keep eating and eating, and I don't have to go back and spend my money anymore because I'm still eating the same vegetables I bought months later, because I have enough of them growing right there to where I can, you know, rotate them in and out of my diet. And they represent tremendous, powerful, nutritious food. Aquaponics is very, very powerful. And it's very, the right kind of system. It's low maintenance and easy to maintain. There's no pulling weeds or anything like that. I have a system that's so robust, I can leave it for a week and come back and it's fine. All the food is doing fine. So there's ways to do this. When you're short on time, you have to make a concerted effort. They have to, you know, learn about it and you know, take, you know, a class or just read a book or article or two. And you can do this. There's YouTube videos all over the place on aquaponics and hydroponics and how to actually use it. I recommend everybody get involved in that to the extent that they can and try and help others to do the same. Once we get ourselves together physically and we can start operating at our maximum potential, we're an awesome force to be reckoned with. And that's for real. But we have to be healthy and strong and sharp. And without our good food, we're not.
Mr. Hardin, I'm curious. Obviously, what your technology is based on, as you said, is aquaponics. Explain to people listening who may not know what aquaponics is in simple terms and what your technology is.
Well, aquaponics is very simple. In nature, you have fish and natural bodies of water. And the fish, during the course of their life, make fish waste in the water. Of course, that's what it is. Well, that water represents nutrition for vegetables. But, again, just like in the soil, microorganisms that can take that waste and turn it into plant food have to be present in the system. And in nature, they're present everywhere. But you basically raise them in your own water source, a fish tank, a IBC tote, these kind of things where the fish are healthy and happy. You feed the fish and they make the waste that gets pumped up to where the plants are, and you have the same microorganisms that live in the ground around the root zone of the plants in your system, and they convert, just like they do in the ground, they convert that fish waste into plant food, and then the plants consume it and get all the nutrition they need to be really good, strong, healthy, nutrient-dense plants. In the process, they clean the water up. Now the fish get the water back, clean, ready for them to keep on using. And it's a closed loop. So the fish make the waste in the water gets pumped up to where the plants are. The microbes around the root zone of the plants change the waste into plant food. Then the plants consume that food, and the water drains back into the fish tank clean. It's a beautiful, low, small ecosystem, and you can use that to produce just about anything you can grow.
So, you know, for someone, I guess, maybe wanting to start out rudimentarily to experiment with this on their own, someone could, in theory, you know, take even something like a small little tub or a container filled with water, and, you know, put the right nutrients in that water and grow plants from out of that, are you saying?
Well, you could do that. You could put the fish in the water and just feed the fish, and they can make the nutrients for you. Either way, with the fish, it's called aquaponics. If you just put nutrients in the water to feed your plants, it's called hydroponics. But hydroponics is a little more difficult because then you have to understand the chemistry of the water and the plants and what they need and how much of it, this and that to put in there. It can be a little more technically challenging than aquaponics, where you just put the fish in and raising your fish like you would ordinarily raise fish in a fish tank. But with that recirculating water that transfers that water over the plant roots, that's the key. The fish will keep the water in a good state, healthy state for the plants. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have to put anything in that water at all. The fish waste is converted into plant food. It's a complete diet for those plants. That's all they need.
Incredible. Let me ask Mr. Harden. So when you put the fish in the tank, and then as you said, they're all that's needed to grow the plant. Their waste, their fertilizer grows the plant. Do people oftentimes not just grow plants in that water, but also harvest the fish themselves as a source of protein? Do they mate them and stuff like that? Is that something that happens or no?
Oh, that's typical. The typical format for aquaponics. It has been traditionally. I will say that lately it's been a movement towards just using the fish to feed the plants without consuming them, because, you know, when you're raising fish, they're going to get big enough to eat. The requirements become a little bit more rigorous. It takes a little more time and energy on your part, and there's a long wait while the fish grow, and then you eat them and you have to start over again. So the real protein injection is kind of spaced out over long periods of time, traditional aquaponics, unless you stagger and have, you know, different size fish growing. And that's possible too, but it requires more care and more. It's more of a commitment to raise fish in aquaponics and raise vegetables. So what people do usually in the cities is they have a small system. If they use those little feeder fish and go get from the little pet shop, like 16, 19 cents a piece. You know, you can get 20 of $20 will get you 100 of them. You know, It's a cheap opportunity to give your plants everything they need, a complete diet, and you're not investing a ton of money, but you're still getting the benefit of having a perfect gardener take care of your garden for you by feeding your plants exactly what they need according to nature's plan. So, and for someone who's busy and living in the city, I would probably recommend that the small, like goldfish-type fish, it can be filled with different species. Almost any fish will work. I've even done this with crabs and shrimp and other aquatic species. It works pretty well with any of those species. It's amazing how powerful nature is. So there's a lot of work being done in this area right now, and in terms of commercial systems and commercial facilities where you're producing a lot of fish and you are selling the fish and stuff, it's worked very well for as a business model. But, you know, if you're doing something at home where you just kind of have some better quality food for you and your family, you may not want to have the extra work involved in really commercially producing fish, especially big fish to require a lot of food and to be fed 2 or 3 times a day. It changes a lot about how you do it if you incorporate the fish as part of the diet. For most people who do it in a small scale at home or something, yeah, I would personally recommend just stick with the vegetables, making the best quality vegetables that you can money can buy, or you don't even need money for this once you invest in the system. But it's going to give you quality food every time, and you don't have to have a lot of headache and hassle. But if you want to do it commercially, that's a whole different ballgame. If you have a business where you do producing food and fish for a profit, then it may make sense to do it where you actually produce a fish to eat.
Oh, wow. I actually wasn't aware of that, so thank you. It educated me there. I wasn't aware that you can use, you know, like your typical goldfish, pet store type fish, and actually set up an aquaponic system using them.
Yeah, they get accessible to just about anybody because they're so cheap.
Wow. So you can make a garden out of your fish tank. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. I've done it in the house and out before. I'm just invited to participate in a project where they're going to be have a commercial fishery right next to a major greenhouse facility, and they want to start trying to use the water from the fishery to feed the plants. I'm trying to help develop that whole program.
Mr. Hardin, you're a biochemist. I wanted to consult some of your expertise as a biochemist and talk more about the impact of, you know, food with substandard food, I'll say, and chemicals in the environment, specifically on our community, on the Black community. So we know that African Americans, compared to European Americans, disproportionately bear the burden of things like environmental toxins, especially things like endocrine disrupting chemicals or ERDCs. Some of which that people have heard of, like PFAS chemicals, those per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. When it comes to substances like these, the endocrine-disrupting chemicals that sometimes are found in the packaging of fast food wrappers, these things, I'm sure as a biochemist you know, have massive deleterious or negative impacts on our bodily systems, especially our, like I said, the endocrine system, the system that's important because it controls your mood, your growth and development, the way your organs work, your metabolism, and your reproduction. And as you correctly pointed out, you know, obviously food is everything. Food is the thing that we take in that determines the foundation that our body is built from, and especially our brain. So how well we're able to think and, you know, our cognitive faculties and stuff like that. So let me ask you, could you go into a little bit more detail, if you're able, and explain to the people better than I can, obviously, because you're the expert here, the impact of environmental chemicals, and maybe some specific environmental chemicals?
Well, of course, the big one is lead. I mean, you know, you're talking about our children developing normally versus, you know, never reaching their potential in life because of exposure to lead. Environmental racism is just another manifestation of, the whole embedded institutionalized racism that is built into the fiber of this country. And you can find examples of it all the way back to the beginning of the country where, you know, we got substandard everything. And as the country evolved, as resources, anytime the resources are scarce, we're the first ones to do without. Anytime there's something garbage to dispose of, they're not going to put it in their communities. They're going to put it in ours. I mean, because we have no power to really protect ourselves from that kind of thing. We don't dictate how the the dams are constructed and where water goes and where old mining waste is diverted to. All these things that they're big business and federal government and state government control are always not, maybe not even so much intensely, but politically dumped on the inner city communities because, you know, they feel, well, they don't vote anyway. What the heck, you know, we don't have to worry about, you know, any consequences of this. We'll just keep on doing business as usual. It's just so many stereotypes and stuff play into that. But it all goes back to slavery in this country. You know, the first institution really to take this country and make it a power, a world power, was agriculture. You know, until then, we all, the whole nation, the rest of the world was agrarian. All people had cultures that were based on the small family farm. But when slavery was implemented in the Caribbean, in South America, and the United States, now all of a sudden everything changes. Now you have these huge mega farms, you know, where they're producing copious amounts of cotton or sugarcane or and all these commodities that were traded on the world market that brought certain small factions, families, even governments, billions and trillions of dollars. And all of a sudden, the family farm was not the source of the foundation of the wealthy class in this country. Now you got rich southern farmers whose wealth just totally overshadows anything that a family farmer could do, no matter how big his family farm was, because that plantation is enormous compared to that. And that whole system that came out of slavery and agriculture was like the testing ground for not just not only racism, institutionalized racism, but environmental racism, all these things that we still deal with today evolved from the whole system of forced slave labor in agriculture. It was like the think tank incubated for institutionalized racism in this country, and as a result of that, you know, we see the situation we're in today. We get the worst food, or food that is just devoid of any kind of real value, nutrient-wise. Our communities are put next to dump sites or dump sites created in our communities. Our children and we ourselves are exposed to all these toxins in the environment. You know, and this is not new. This has been going on since the very beginning of this country. But, you know, we're less able to defend ourselves against these things on a physical level without good quality food. That's something we always were able to do because, I mean, especially black people have this long genetic legacy of evolution. We, of course, man, we're very evolved. Our immune systems are, when they're really at their peak, have seen everything over the annals of time. And we have defenses against that innately and built into our whole DNA. But that can't be expressed. We don't have the nutrition that allow us to do that. So all those advantages that allow us to survive everything we've been through all these many, many hundreds and hundreds of years are just slipping away because, you know, we can't support our genetics with the food that we take in.
Absolutely.
We're pretty powerful, potent human beings, but anybody who's starving to death is not going to be, and even if you think you're eating right, you're eating a bunch of garbage, it's not going to support the kind of things we're talking about, your immunity, your clarity, your wisdom, your spirit, your soul, your ability to communicate. All these things depend on, you know, your body having what it needs.
That's an important point you mentioned, a very important point. About, you didn't say this specifically, but what you described is epigenetic suppression of African genetic potential through the environment, especially, you know, that suppression of the African genetic diversity that's going to produce those extreme variant traits, like, you know, some extreme variant traits that African genetic diversity produces that most laypersons are familiar with are, you know, extreme athleticism, let's say really strong muscles or really strong bones, quick twitch muscle fibers, but those aren't the only ones. Really, every type of extreme trait Africans are more likely to express, even extreme genetic variant traits that, you know, enhance your cognition, all these things like that, enhance your lifespan, your health span. Africans, because of that genetic diversity, and genetic diversity is something I spoke about before, hopefully we can have another conversation on this, that genetic diversity is basically like the storehouse for that extreme genetic potential. Black people basically being kind of like the closest thing you get to actual X-Men and X-Women in the human species because of that extreme genetic diversity, and all that's being suppressed epigenetically or turned off or turned down by environmental chemicals, by environmental intervention, a lot of which comes from food, as you mentioned. So that's very important.
Some of it may be accidental, but I don't know. Maybe some of it is not so accidental, but it's certainly under attack from the situation we're under right now. But if we have to take charge of this situation ourselves, this is something we cannot whine and complain about or protest walking down the street about. Get some seeds, get some fish, get some, plants and get them going and start trying to learn, teach each other.
Absolutely. YouTube.
To us. Yes. I got some videos on YouTube myself. Please, I implore everyone to do this. This is our foundation of everything we do and everything we are. You know, this is what keeps us, strong. And without this, we're in trouble. We have to really be, really be conscious of this. If we have, when we are on our, hitting along all cylinders, we can't be outrun, we can't be outfought, we can't be outthought. But if we let ourselves be poisoned slowly, and slip, we're going to slip away. And there's not going to be anything to do about it.
And we're going to ask Mr. Cannon, Dr. Cannon, to join us in this conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Beautiful conversation. You know, I guess it comes down to the old saying, we are what we eat, and our food is our medicine. And with that understanding, then, some people recommend veganism and becoming straight vegetarian or totally giving up all forms of meat and even fish, which there you lack a lot of protein, but, with a lot of the chemicals, the preservatives, the meat and the food, I guess it's a trade-off, that we have to really take inventory of our own bodies and what we put in to it. My dad passed of leukemia, five years ago, seems just like yesterday. But one of the things was his diet and his appetite. And even as I think about it, the doctor who was giving him the chemo, he knew that it was against his health situation to allow him to eat anything that he wanted to eat while he was taking chemo. I mean, it was counterproductive to eat all the wrong things when your body needs great nutrition. But when people going through chemo, they're what they eat, their appetite, their taste buds are off. So you almost got to give them whatever they want if you want them to eat, because all that healthy stuff, that's not what they want to eat when they're going through it. I guess what I'm saying is a lot of people don't want to change their diets even when they're in a life and death situation. And if it's left up to the person, then they will say, give me a Coca-Cola, give me this, give me that, at a time where their body needs maximum nutrition to fight off the attack and the disease that's coming at them. I find that the medical industry is not going to teach you about nutrition. It's not going to teach you about how to get the poisons up out of your body by eating right. It's a conflict of interest, because they're going to get paid from the potions and the chemicals that they give you. So we as people find ourselves in a dilemma, because we're trusting the people that we're told to trust, and they're not giving us all the right information, even when they see us in a life and death situation with illnesses and sicknesses. So this conversation, my brother, is so powerful and so needed, and we have to, my dad said before he passed, we might need to get our families together every week and talk about this, because our nutrition is so very, very important, and we neglect it so easily. I appreciate this conversation, really I do tonight.
Well, everybody, we got idea to do that at grandma's house, and everybody have dinner from the garden that you got in the backyard when you had that discussion. We got to take charge. We do it now. It's nice optional.
Well, you know, to that point, my grandmother's 192 years old. Excuse me, 102, not 92. He said, that Mr. Cannon's a lie. I don't care what he said. He said his grandma 192. I'm done with him. She's 102 years old. And I know for sure at 95, I was out there with her in the garden. At 95, I don't know if she's planting it at 10, but I think I would say she still got a garden, my brother. So I would say, if you was asked her about her longevity of life, she would say because she plants a garden and she eats the food from a garden.
Yeah, that's so powerful. It's so powerful. The witness of it, you know. This is not statistics. This is common sense. You are what you eat, and our food is our medicine.
You know, when we did all the canning. You know, my grandmother told me that, you know, we as black people, we had all the canning and the jarring. We mastered that technology, you know, of being able to store our food and preserve our foods. And, you know, and we planted garden, you know, so that's not a strange thing for us as a people, you know. We rather have that swimming pool in the backyard, you know, we rather have those niceties. You know, but if there's a way, I mean, even with myself, you know, to learn how to eat better, you know, learn how to, you know, for men, we probably have to find a woman that can cook and prepare food, you know, in the easy way for us to help us change our diet. You know, my mom's attitude was, you know, that's the type of food he likes, so that's the type of food I'm going to cook for him. So she cooks two big old beautiful baked hams with the pineapple on it and the honey dripping down it and, you know, all those things that's really not good for us as black people, but it's a part of our heritage in cooking it, that and our custom of cooking it, you know, the pig feed and the hog mogs and the chitlins and, you know, but, you know, to really look at, can we change our taste buds and our appetite to where, you know, we can start eating something that might not look as good to us, but it's good for us.
Well, I believe that a lot of it has to do with the source, you know, some of those, if you're raising your own animals, and you take care of the animals, make sure they eat clean food, they're not going to have a lot of stuff in there in the fat tissues of their body stored that's going to harm you from consuming it. So the stuff that comes from these feeds that you can buy, eating grass, real grass, if you know it's real grass because they're eating your grass that you grow. We have to take charge and eat clean food. People can eat a lot more diverse meals than some people think. Veganism is as powerful and as important. It's not a bad thing. I'm not saying at all. I'm saying you don't have to leave anybody behind. Anybody who eats meat can eat clean, good meat, and it may not be the best thing on earth for them physically, but it's certainly not going to harm them as much as something that's got a bunch of, you know, steroids and poisons in the flesh of it. So we have to really go back to produce our own food, making sure our food is clean, and then we make a choice, you know, how we want to make our diet, develop our diet, and control our diet. It'll be an individual choice, but that's not going to be something that's going to kill you.
If I could share some with the listening audience right now to help them better understand the importance of a food biochemically, consider that all the pharmaceutical medicine you take, all the drugs you take, work because they work based on your natural bodily system, your biochemical system. And what I mean by that is in your body, when your body wants to metabolize certain chemicals and use them to, let's say, speed up healing or, you know, other functions in your body to improve it. If you want to decrease pain, whenever your body wants to metabolize a chemical and use it for good, like a pharmaceutical chemical, it works based off of a lock and key situation where the shape of the molecule fits into a unique shape of a receptor on the side of your cell. So your cells have receptors on them like little antennae, and they have a certain shape. And the molecule they metabolize is the molecule that fits into that receptor's shape. Now, all you'd have to ask yourself is, if your receptors on your cells have certain types of shapes that only certain types of molecules can fit into, and you're taking pharmaceutical drugs that your body is successfully metabolizing, that's only because the shape of that pharmaceutical drug fits into the shape of your cell's receptors. Now, why would that be the case? Would your body just make random receptors with random shapes and just hope that somewhere along the process of evolution, some molecules that have the right shape fall into it? Well, no. Your body, the reason your body is able to metabolize pharmaceutical drugs is because your body makes those drugs or a similar version of it. Or to put it more simply, your body makes those chemicals in those drugs or similar chemicals to it. That's the only reason you can metabolize pharmaceutical drugs and get a benefit from them, is because they're just a copy of what your body already makes naturally, or something very similar to what your body already makes naturally. Meaning, you have the epigenetic potential inside yourself to start expressing these chemicals that you take from pharmaceutical companies natural. These chemicals that speed up your healing, these chemicals that decrease your inflammation, these chemicals that improve your body, they're already in your body. The pharmaceutical industry is just studying what your body does naturally, and they sell you a higher potency of the same chemical you already make. And I don't have a problem with that, to be honest. You know, pharmaceuticals are powerful and useful. It's really so much the perverse profit incentive that puts money over people's lives. But nevertheless, the important point is you cannot metabolize chemicals unless they fit into the shape of receptors on your cells. And the only reason you have receptors on your cells that can receive the shape of that molecule is because your body makes that molecule or a similar one. So when you eat food, food is the raw material that your internal pharmacy, your biological pharmacy, uses to reconstruct different molecules and chemicals your body needs. That's the importance of food. You are your own pharmacy. In fact, your natural biological pharmacy, your body, is far more advanced than any, you know, pharmaceutical company. That's why whenever they want to find a drug that can help people with something, let's say heart disease, like cardiovascular disease, they study people. They study the genetics of people. They study people's bodies to see what exceptional people their bodies are already doing. And then they try to use that exceptional person, like let's say an African, because Africans, like I said, most genetically diverse, most extreme variant traits. They'll go inside an African's body and say, okay, this African is exceptional. They have a gene mutation that causes their body to overly express something natural inside of it, like a particular chemical. And as a result of that, they have lower rates of cardiovascular problems. What we're going to do is we're going to copy that and mass produce it. So it started from a natural source from the body. That's what most pharmaceutical drugs, if they're effective, do. You have this potential inside of you. You need the raw materials, good raw materials, in order to allow your body to, you know, build from. And these good raw materials is this healthy food that, you know, Dr. Cannon spoke of and that Mr. Harden is speaking about.
Let me say a little something. If there's times when you may not be making enough of something because of an unusual kind of challenge you may face, infectious disease or something, in which case there's things in the environment that can provide you with those same types of things that have to lock and key fit with the receptors on your cells. And all of our shamans and medicine men know about these things, and they would give us those to us when we needed them. My grandmother used to know what to give us when we had certain kind of ailments. And it may not be something that we had – couldn't produce in our bodies, but maybe we needed a little boost or something at that moment in time. So the medicines that come from natural plants and stuff often is what is imitated and duplicated in order to have these different pharmaceutical drugs, something you could grow in your garden just as easily as you go down there and get a $100 bill to the pharmacist for something that you could grow for $10 a year.
Absolutely.
And so you can grow what you need in your garden to promote your own healing biochemically. To spark the healing. But could I say that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I mean, saying the food is your medicine is such a deep, deep statement, because it empowers you to make your own natural defenses stronger. Also, often it will have stuff in it that can help you deal with extreme challenges you may be facing at the moment. Little things can make a big difference. You take these Ambien and stuff and go to sleep and fall or hit your head while you're walking down the hallway, or you could go to the garden and get a few leaves off of a sage plant, make a hot cup of tea, and go to sleep just like a baby. We have the power to grow most of the medicine we need for anything ails us right there in our homes.
Mm-hmm. So the pharmaceutical companies and our medical societies have persuaded the citizens, you know, us to believe that the pharmacy, the drugs that carry so many side effects, is what we need to heal, and it really doesn't really heal us, right?
It's for profit, and the reason why you have so many side effects is because, like I said, they are trying to imitate the natural pharmacy, which is your body, which has been developing for far longer than human pharmacies have existed. Human pharmacies, the idea of a pharmaceutical company, some centuries maybe, your body, hundreds of thousands, millions of years old. Nature has been cultivating the capabilities of basically chemical transmutation. Your body is kind of, it takes natural materials, raw materials like food, and if it's good raw materials, then obviously, here's the difference. If you're building a house, do you want very strong, sturdy bricks, or do you want very brittle bricks? You obviously want the strong bricks so you can build a strong house, especially a strong foundation. That's the difference between having good food and bad food with the nutrients you need and food that doesn't have the nutrients you need. Your body is going to use those bricks to build a house, and if you have the weak, brittle bricks, it's not going to stand. And also, if you do somehow manage to build the house out of these weak, brittle bricks, which, again, this analogy means you have represents a poor diet with food that's of lesser quality. If you do manage to build that house, guess what? That house is going to be more vulnerable to damage. If someone takes a sledgehammer to it, what do you think is going to break easier, strong bricks or brittle bricks? Well, obviously, brittle bricks. That sledgehammer can be used as an analogy for things that would naturally, affect us, but don't have to affect you as much, say, diseases or negative chemicals in the environment. These things are going to hurt someone who has a poorer foundation than someone who has a better foundation. The sledgehammers in our environment, the things that, can knock us around, they're going to be more effective at destroying a house made out of brittle bricks than a house made out of strong bricks.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a very important point to note, is that your body is the natural pharmaceutical company that the pharmaceutical companies are trying to imitate, because your body doesn't really produce that much side effects. If it's given the right, proper raw materials like good food, it will take these molecules apart and recombine them into what you need and express it in your body at the level in which you need it. It's unparalleled, natural genius and, capability.
That's very important. to know. And so even in this, during this pandemic and what we're dealing with the...
vitally important,
you know,
now.
So, yes, yes, because if you take this, I don't know, I just don't understand. I can't, my brain doesn't, can't calculate why I would put a, you know, this foreign substance into my system and I'm not sick, or even if I was sick, I should be able to eat my way out of this or fast my way out of it.
You want to know something interesting
about
that, Dr. Lee? What vaccines actually do? Vaccines are supposed to stimulate your own natural immune system.
Mm-hmm.
They don't fight anything in your body. What they do, what medical or the vaccine manufacturers do, is they create something using usually like a weaker strain of a virus that's supposed to stimulate your natural immune system, and they count on your natural immune system, after it being stimulated, killing a virus itself.
To do the work.
Right. So they're still using your own natural system. They're selling you your own natural capacity.
The trick is they try, and it's not going to be, quote unquote, not going to be pathogenic to stimulate your immune system to work like that. But oftentimes, because people's immune system is already very weak, the stuff that they give them to stimulate their immune system turns out being very, very, very detrimental to them.
Especially people with poor diets.
Yeah, it's a source of vulnerability that is unparalleled. Your immune system is your bricks he's talking about. Without your bricks, got good, solid, hard bricks, you know, first thing that comes along, you're going to crumble. Like the coronavirus, the flu, is many things that could harm you greatly. They probably wouldn't even make you sneeze if you really had your system had everything it needed to really protect itself like it should.
And not only that, it's even more. Your body is so capable that those this analogy of bricks is actually a really good one, because not only can your natural bodily systems, like your immune system, be compared to strong or weak bricks, depending on whether or not the material you're using to make the bricks is good material or bad material, like a good diet or a poor diet. But it's a very special, different type of brick, a brick that can get stronger over time. That's not like a regular brick. Your body can actually get stronger. Most houses, when you build them, it doesn't matter how well you built them, how good the material is you built them out of, with inorganic substances, they all decay a little bit over time. They can't really go backwards and get better over time unless you put new materials in the house. Unlike the body, it's not inorganic mostly, right? We're mostly organic compounds that can be used to change the body. So we can get stronger over time. We can strengthen those bricks. We don't just have to accept them at their whatever state we first inherited them in, or whatever state we currently have them in. We can strengthen those bricks over time. So it's a very different type of brick. It's a living brick, if you will.
It's the potential of our bodies to take care of themselves is enormous, but you can't go to a gunfight with a knife. You have to give your body the nutrition that it needs so that you can realize your own human potential. Without that, you know, it's just impossible. It has to start there. For everything we do, everything we are, it has to start with our food. I hope people are understanding that how fundamental this is to our existence. The stuff that people eat now is not helping them protect themselves. And if you keep on eating and thinking you're going to be okay eating this stuff that's empty, without the nutrition that you need to arm yourself against all these chemical, viral, bacterial assaults that you're constantly under chemtrail, the list is so enormously long, I can't even begin to scratch the surface. But our bodies can deal with all of it if we are well fed, truly well fed. Our existence depends on this.
I can't, Mr. Harden, you have to tell me, because I don't know if I have this correct, the exact percentage, but what is it, like something, the brain consumes about, what, 20% of your body's energy as an adult? Is that about right?
Yeah, it's in that range.
Yeah, the most disproportionately consuming organ of your body, your brain, most disproportionately more than almost any other organ in your body consumes, more energy than the amount of weight and mass it takes up in your body. And a lot of people don't know that the impulse you get, the hunger impulse you get, isn't necessarily always mediated by nutrition, meaning that when your body gives you the impulse to feel hungry, that doesn't necessarily come about because your body is saying that we need more nutrition. Sometimes that can be tricked. Sometimes you can feel that only, if you eat things that don't have nutrition, you can fill yourself up and suppress your hunger impulse, even if the things you ate didn't actually provide you with enough nutrition to get all your daily recommended doses of things like your vitamins and your minerals. You can eat to the point where your hunger impulse is suppressed, but you still don't have enough nutrients in your body. And that's something that is kind of scary and worrisome that a lot of people should know about. You can be eating and think, well, I'm full, so I must have gotten everything I needed out of the food. But your fullness does not come from, a lot of the times, your body telling you that you have enough nutrition from what you just ate. It really more so just comes from you eating enough to trigger a response in your brain to turn that hunger sensation off.
Starving to death with a mouthful of food.
Absolutely.
Mr. Hardy, you have developed a system that you named AgriHub. Now, you have several ways, or maybe it's levels where communities can become involved in taking control over their food via the AgriHub. And then you have what's called that what you named barn dominiums. And I'd like for you to explain, starting at the family level, how a family can develop a business, right in their backyards or in a room in their home, with your system that is where you provide the training, you provide everything. It's almost like a turnkey operation, and they can actually earn money, in doing so. These different, sizes of AgriHubs, and how, and then, the larger AgriHubs, how they connect. How they connect city by city, and also how they can realize income and the management part of it, how your technical system, provides, the management and the monitoring of their plants, and not just your food, but cannabis and hemp as well. So if you can kind of shift gears a little bit to talk about that, and then I'm going to ask you to speak just a little bit louder, so that a few are saying that they're having difficulty hearing. So if you could just speak up a little bit louder as well, Mr. Harding.
I apologize for that. Glad to accommodate you, and I hope this is better. Let me just say that we should talk about economics now. Nutrition was the topic so far.
Just a little bit louder. A little bit louder.
The economics of food is a very, very important area for us to focus on right now. There's a revolution in this country right now around food, around growing, farming. And it's not just food, it's medicine as well. The medicines that come from the cannabis plant, the cannabis includes both hemp and marijuana. There are so many medicines in hemp and marijuana that it's really revolutionizing the way people take care of themselves around the world right now. It's been suppressed for political and economic reasons by the powers that be for a long time. However, the cat is out of the bag, so to speak, at this point. And there's a green revolution going on right now where there's fortunes being made in the medical marijuana industry and the recreational marijuana industry, as well as the hemp industry. And hemp really has the most potential of all, because hemp is an awesome plant that can be turned into dozens and dozens of products that people can sell and create a real wealth with. So there's an opportunity right now for people in this country, and black people should be compelled to take advantage of this. There's a lot of pushback, of course, because institutionalized racism has pervaded every corner of this country and every institution. There's a lot of efforts to keep African Americans in particular out of this industry. But they what else is there? I mean, we have to fight this battle every day, no matter what. So it's just another iteration of that. We have to organize and fight organized resistance to the access. We have to have access to these new industries if it blows up. This country created a great economy. Many families in this country created generational wealth off the backs of African slaves. Now this new batch of billionaires being created now in agriculture. This is owed to us. We made them wealthy the first time because we were slaves. Now we are slaves no more, and this industry is creating opportunity that has existed in this country since slavery was instituted into this country. But now we have access to this too. We have to make sure we enforce our political power to gain access to these licenses to grow and to produce and to sell and to process these cannabis crops. We have to start farming again in urban farms near the city and in the city, and take a very vulnerable agriculture industry back. We used to grow food for everyone in this country. Black people were the farmers, especially in the South, that fed the whole region. We have to get back in that position again, but this time we can own the fruits of our labor, which we couldn't necessarily do the first time through. We have to reclaim the expertise that went with that and rededicate ourselves. It's not sitting in the hot, sun all day long on your knees anymore. Now it's a climate-controlled greenhouse or a repurposed building where you're looking at a smartphone and measuring things and inspecting plants. Very different. Farms had to be involved in agriculture. Not such a bad job. As a business. Now, in my AgriHub system, what we have done is we create large agriculture facilities that are designed to do three things. One is to educate the community about food. Two is to engage the community and the farmers in the food industry, to teach them and train them, to train a whole new generation of urban farmers that would be trained in the technology to grow in and around the urban centers where the people consume the food. Now it's not coming from Mexico or Brazil or some far distant land where it has to be picked green and shipped, for 2 or 3 weeks before it gets to the market. It's coming from down the street. People can go and see where their food is coming from. Know that it's being grown in a healthy, right manner so that it's going to support their health. It's a big, big gap right now. And black people are uniquely positioned to take advantage of this. We live in urban centers mostly. We have a readily available workforce. There's so many of us out of work that could be employed in this area. So you won't have any problem finding people who can work in a nice, present, environmental setting where you got growing beautiful green plants and it's climate control. The food has to be protected, so we have to go indoors and in greenhouses now. So the environment is not unfriendly as it could have been thought to be, not that long ago. The opportunities to have an urban farm, we're trying to make them available to people in the quote-unquote food deserts. But this is where the biggest need is in our community. We're trying to develop large facilities that are involved in, one, teaching the community about food, two, training a new generation of farmers to grow food in urban centers, and lastly, to support those farmers and their farms as they start to produce. So if you get if you come and train with us about how to become an urban farmer, and we help you start your farm through a loan or whatever, and you're up and running now, trying to figure it all out, it's still kind of new. We have your back. We support you with technical support. We support you remotely from monitoring your farm through sensors and stuff that's built into your farm. If something goes wrong, we can know when you know. We can help you take care of it, fix it, make sure you stay on track. Don't lose any money. Don't lose any opportunity. And as you grow as a farmer, you can start to grow your business and hire people to work with you and farm on your farm in and around these urban centers and have a really viable, productive, profitable business. Food cannabis is a great opportunity too, but food is the mother of all civilization and economics, period. Everybody has to eat. You don't get a bigger opportunity than that to make money in terms of anywhere, anytime you live on this planet, there's always somebody who wants to buy food if you have it and it's good. We're creating farmers, we're supporting those farmers with things like transportation, logistics, refrigeration, processing, value-added processes for their food, pickling, jarring, all those things that were mentioned earlier. We're trying to bring all those traditions back into vogue so that people can relearn how to grow and process and create beautiful, healthy, nutritious food for themselves and their communities and beyond. Because if we get these farms going well enough, they'll be able to supply food to their local communities. And I would say there's a critical mass of farmers in these communities. They'll start being able to supply food to people in the surrounding communities. And who's not going to buy as fresh local organic food as opposed to the stuff that came from, New Zealand or, Iceland or wherever it comes from these days? That's not flavorful. It's not healthy. It's a great opportunity because people, they when they taste really good quality food, they know immediately there's something different about it. It's really a good thing. Some people have never even tasted a real well-grown apple or tomato or carrot that's grown organically in good, healthy soil. The flavor difference is enormous. And once they taste it, they know. They've been getting an inferior product for a long time. So it's the market that's ready, ripe, and ready to be taken over. We have to cover the whole class of farmers, urban farmers, in our inner cities with these quote-unquote food deserts are. This is something we can fix ourselves. So food deserts is something that is a result of a lot of things, but we have the tools and we have the initiative and the ingenuity and the technology to turn these food deserts into food oases and bring the communities back on a very fundamental level economically and in terms of health as well.
And so, thank you
That's
so much. I'm sorry. Yeah,
I'm
so
just
I just wanted to, right. So I just wanted to just like add here, clarify, for some listeners. So what Mr. Harding is saying here is that your family can actually develop a farm on your property at your home and get all the support you need for it to be an income-producing venture for you and your family, where you would be providing food, within your community. You're on your street, your block, two or three blocks circumference, and, feed your family well and earn money as well. And some of the things that we are working on is capital, depending on how large you want to build your farm. If you've got land or lots, there's funding also that's available. And so the more we can bring into this AgriHub, this is how we're taking over, taking charge of our food and our health. I do want to, for some reason, something keeps happening to my board, but I do want to acknowledge a caller, 269-4211, has question and comment. You're live.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Lee.
You're welcome.
I wanted to was speaking earlier, but as a person who's in the field of medicine and also professor as well as one who's been doing an urban garden now, this would be the eighth year with children and youth. I have to first go back in terms of the American Academy of Science. The president of there showed that the whole multivitamin system that's set up is really underdosed in terms of the American public, because the average American actually would need three complete multivitamins a day, not one. To do a one-a-day vitamin, you need to be in perfect health, and then that's just your supplement. The other point that's very important is that because of the attack from the pharmaceutical industry, there has been discouragement in terms of supplements. Supplements is not to treat a disease. Supplement is not to treat a disease. Supplement is not to treat a disease. The supplement is to help enhance, help build, help strengthen, help support the immune system. And how the media has recently attacked the supplement in terms of the whole COVID, that they presented the data that show it does not treat COVID or prevent COVID. No, that is not the role of the supplements. As mentioned earlier, that the body produces antibodies that actually fight the different viruses and bacteria, and all you're doing is providing support to that immune system, especially through CoQ10, coenzyme Q10. Another one is called glucertin. Another one is called glutathione, those things. So in terms of we are not eating at a nutritious meal, then also that the gentleman knows that most of the soil is kind of depleted of trace minerals, and, you know, volcanic ash could be actually helped to bring that here and to help you do those soils. The other point with urban gardening that we found in the African-American community in the city of Benton Harbor and in the city of Grand Rapids, that organic don't mean, excuse me, a damn thing. That all it means is that it's more expensive. And that's what we've had to deal with when talking about organic. So saying more natural, or just saying that this is how they grew it down south, people identify that more. Our youth program, you know, we could make the food super economical for people to purchase, but saying it as organic, you have some leeway in white communities and wealthy communities, but you don't mean a damn thing in black communities. It just means they fart, you overcharge it. So we have to educate, and we have to find a way to also bring down the cost of the natural gardening, of the old-fashioned gardening, which we call organic, so that it's sustainable for the family in the community. The other point is that we are working on urban gardening, that I'm really interested in mending the soil, because a lot of that is poor soil. And our program, which is 8 years old, we've trimmed down to just 9 city lots, but they're all now located together. Before, we were spread out, we had more, and trying to expand, and now we actually have a water source. And so urban garden, with people have problems that we've seen, is that they start off good, and then when it gets dry and there's not a water source, we had to transport buckets of water 7 blocks to our garden. So that's something that the urban gardening person should know, that water source is very important to the urban garden, and how to mend the soil is very important. And that I think the sales pitch is more, this is this is natural, just how it was grown down south by your grandparents and great parents. I think that's more of a selling a feature than trying to use the fancy word organic. So I'd like your input on what you think about our experience in Benton Harbor and Grand Rapids.
Before Mr. Harden responds, I'd like to expand on something really important that the caller mentioned. I appreciate the caller for saying what he said, because he reminded me of something. Firstly, I just want to say, as it relates to urban gardening, what he said is absolutely correct. A lot of the times, you know, when you buy property to create these farms, over time you realize that maybe you don't have as much help, or the help that you had when you first started this garden isn't as dependable. And so you have to drive away. You have to drive some ways away to a property you own and try to manage it yourself. Whereas with this aquaponics type approach that Mr. Harden is suggesting, you actually cut out a lot of the cost, the transportation costs of you having to drive back and forth to a property you own, as well as cut out a lot of the costs that comes with you having to, you know, hire enough people to manage these farms. And you can actually have something closer to your place of residence, or even in your house, with this like fish tank farming situation that Mr. Harden is talking about. So that's important, because as Mr. Harden said, it's much cheaper, and you don't have to sacrifice any of the quality. This aquaponics, this basically fish tank farming closer to your house, or even in your house. One more thing, though, I want to expand on before I allow Mr. Harden to respond to that, is something that the caller mentioned about how supplements are oftentimes intentionally or unintentionally misinterpreted in their use relating to protecting the body from viruses. So what the caller said was absolutely correct. Using our brick house analogy again, supplements are basically, and good food as well, are basically equivalent to chemicals someone would put into a brick mix or a concrete mix to make the brick stronger. They don't prevent people from hitting the side of your house with a sledgehammer. That sledgehammer represents, you know, viruses and pathogens. They don't prevent those things from slamming into your house. The supplements are just to make the bricks stronger, so that the bricks are more durable or impervious to those hits when they occur.
That's exactly the case. You know, we have to make our farms more profitable, because if it doesn't make balance, it doesn't make sense. It's not going to be sustainable. The whole volunteer garden model doesn't work anymore. People don't volunteer as much as they used to, and it's just a band-aid. It's temporary. Volunteers get tired, they stop coming, and pretty soon it goes away. If we're making money off these farms, I mean, really significant amounts of money on these farms, they're going to be there. I mean, people don't give away their businesses that are doing well just because they get tired. They just get somebody else to work on it, and they keep making their money. If it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. And this is a way to increase or add to your current income, or even to replace it. In some cases, if you want to really invest, you can make quite a good living growing food in an urban farm. So I recommend people can take a good hard look at this for a number of reasons. The least of which is not just the economic impact you can have on your life can be tremendous, and not to mention the health and stability it can have in terms of diversifying your income and whatnot. And it's a good way to bond with your family too. When you start selling food to your neighbors, all of a sudden you have, you know, conversations with people who live in your community. You start to rebuild your community again around food. You start to have food together, eat together. Food, our whole culture is based around food, especially Black people. Always has been. Well, now the food is gone, and our culture is suffering for it, too. We bring food back, we can bring a lot of things back that we miss and need right now.
Mr. Harden, talk a little bit about, if you could, the benefits of having, you know, this aquaponic farming situation set up as it relates to, you know, what you think of traditionally when you buy a plot of land and you drive some ways away to where it is to farm it and till it. The benefits of having this set up, obviously closer to where you live, if not in your actual house or, you know, in your backyard, and how much you don't have to worry about, you know, waiting for rain, whether it will or won't rain that day, and whether or not there is or isn't enough sunlight, or if the plants are getting enough sunlight, if they're getting too much shade. Talk about the benefits like that associated with aquaponics.
Well, you build systems in places where you can take advantage of whatever resources that you have. if you have a vacant building, you might want to build a farm, indoor farm with grow lights. If you have an open field where you can build a farm, you may want to build a greenhouse that's protected from the environment to the extent that a greenhouse can protect it and it takes advantage of natural free sunlight. You know, wherever you are, there's a way to incorporate food growing into that situation. I have a friend of mine who designed a system, and I built it for him too. It was to hang off his. He was in a one bedroom apartment in New York. He designed a system that hung off his windowsill, about 10 feet down the side of his building, where he was growing leafy greens in his system. There's a way to do this, no matter where you are. Technology is so advanced that it's adaptable to the extreme. So we can all participate in this, and the more of us that do, the better off we are for it.
Mr. Harden, does artificial lighting factor into this type of technology, or is there a way that would be able to be used, let's say, as a stand-in for sunlight? If there isn't enough sunlight for your aquaponic setup or your plants, would there be a way to use or incorporate artificial lighting?
Oh, of course, yes. The cannabis industry has been great for helping develop the technology around artificial light and farming. A lot of medical marijuana is grown indoors. Food can be grown similarly. Food is grown in greenhouses that uses supplemental light all the time. Because sometimes you want to grow food, the summertime food in the winter, but the days are getting shorter, so the food doesn't grow quite as well in the wintertime. But if you turn on artificial lights right at sunset, when the light is beginning to fade, you make the plants think it's still summertime because the day seems like it's longer than it actually is. So artificial light is great for growing food plants. You can do it in a completely indoor environment or a greenhouse where you mix sunlight with artificial light. It's a great resource and great tool to give a person more power to farm close to home or in the city or at home. I have people who have basements where they have full-on, you know, grows where they're making supporting the whole family from what they grow in their basement, whether it be cannabis or food. I have a friend who does microgreens and makes, you know, $6,000-$7,000 a month in his house, in two rooms in the garage in his house. And he works for himself.
Mr. Harding.
His own business doing well. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Harding, could you, without, if we're not impinging upon intellectual property or secrets to your trade, can you explain how the barn dominiums work or farm dominiums, or would you not want to speak on that right now?
Actually, we call barn dominiums ordinarily, but we changed the name to grow dominiums because we're turning it into medical marijuana facilities where you can grow medical marijuana. In a huge building. It's kind of like a barn, but it's really made for human habitation. But it's just
okay,
a big
okay,
open
okay,
space.
I'm going to interrupt just for a quick second here. So I want the listening audience to know that even though you're speaking on marijuana, this is still at your for your vegetables and your fruit and vegetables as well. Right,
oh,
where
yeah.
they can.
Absolutely.
Okay, and that these are like towers, you know, the vertical towers, and the water and the fish within a building. So, caller mentioned earlier about the city lot. Could a grow dominium be built on a city lot?
Well, one of the things that we do in this grow dominiums, whether we're growing food or whatever, is to use vertical towers. We designed some towers just recently that are the most productive system I think that exists probably. If you have a 4 foot by 4 foot area and you fill it up with these towers and pack them in tightly, which is possible, you can do that quite easily. You can get 16 of them in like a 4 foot square footprint. That's the size of one of these, like these big IBC totes, big white things that they have, like chemicals and soaps and stuff in. That same footprint, 4 foot by 4 foot, we grow 640 plants in that footprint, using these vertical towers, because we're not growing on just the ground. We're growing on the ground, we're growing 5 inches and growing some more, and 5 inches up and growing some more, 5 inches up and growing some more, until we have, you know, 10 or 12 different iterations of that plant that will only be one plant in that same place on the ground. It's now 15, 16 plants on that same footprint, but it's going up and it's growing in three dimensions instead of just on the ground on two dimensions of length and width. Now we're growing length, width, and height. Several iterations going, repeating at every few inches going up. So 640 plants is a lot of plants on a 4x4 square foot area. It's powerful technology. It's powerful technology, and it makes it enable an urban farmer to grow a lot of food in a small area.
Okay. And so a regular city lot where the growth dominiums, they were like three floors, am I correct? Like they're designed to be like three floors with the upper level being the actual residential area and the first two levels being grow areas. And
yes,
which one,
good.
Yeah, and one grow dominium could realize an income. I mean, I've seen, you know, some of your numbers, and they were great. So with vegetables, fruit and vegetables, you know, within one, what would you say a certain square footage of a grow dominium could produce as far as revenue on a yearly basis? Because you don't have any shutdown time. You don't have any time where you're not growing.
Right. And you're growing vertically, so you're growing maybe eight times as much food in the same area. A grow dominium, a typical grow dominium would be like 60 foot wide and 100 foot long. And a space that size, when you're doing two floors of food, with the, you know, residents on top, workers on top, you're looking at, you know, you could have a multi-million dollar business in an area, in that small of an area, in one building. If you're growing certain crops, it doesn't have to be anything medical marijuana or related to that. It could be herbs. You can have a multi-million dollar business growing herbs in a footprint that size using the right vertical technology on two floors of that size easily. It's the opportunity is just amazing.
Okay. So our time is winding up. Just going to ask our co-host, and I apologize. I don't, from my end, I'm having computer issues and internet issues. So I don't know who... I don't know who's got questions. I can't see that part, but I'm hoping that my technical person can. But I would like for the caller has any further questions or statements or comments from the 4211 number, feel free. Okay, then we'll go to Dr. Cannon.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, hello. Yep. Yeah, thank you, Dr. Hope you can still hear me.
Yeah, we can still hear you.
Yeah. I just have to be honest. It's a little bit, as a urban gardener, it's a little bit confusing. But we also have a homeless boy shelter that we have space for. So it looks like we have a fish tank, and then we have certain vegetable plants that can grow into the fish tank that the nitrogen from the fish waste supplies it. And then the vertical garden, it's like, it sounds like almost like using trellis to grow things. But the soil on the vacant lot, are you using the stuff from the fish tanks or whatever to nourish that soil? Because sometimes it's mud, sometimes it's topsoil with, you know, bad stuff that's been actually depleted. How can the urban gardener increase their yield? How and does the herbal gardening should emphasize trying to build more trellises, more vertical, and how easy it is to maintain a fish tank, because that seems like that's going to be some work with making sure the oxygen and does the water have to be changed and clean. So there's a lot of questions with this hydroponic gardening and vertical gardening.
There's a lot of ways to do it. There's systems that can be very, very low maintenance. The water change, there's no need to change water because it's a closed loop system and the water is constantly being cleaned by the plant if they absorb nutrition from the water. There's technical ways to keep it very low maintenance for sure. That will allow you to be very productive with a minimum labor pool. And so the children enjoy doing this type of stuff much more than I would ever have anticipated. I have to say, as a teacher, I first started doing this in my high school class, science class, and I had no intention of going down this extra career path. The impact on my kids was so profound, I almost couldn't believe it. I kept back to going back and doing more experiments in aquaponics and hydroponics just to see everything can still have the same effect on it. And they just totally enthralled by this stuff. Even my most difficult children were just laser focused when we were doing aquaponics and hydroponics for some reason. And it was consistent over time across the board, no exceptions. And actually, it was actually using it to make them do their work. If you didn't do your work, you know, on time, you wouldn't be able to go outside and go to the garden. In terms of the soil is not really necessarily a part of what we're doing with aquaponics and hydroponics. There's no soil involved in growing in that method. Really, the soil needs a chance to rest and recover. There's things we can do to help it do that, like, you know, composting, et cetera. But the soil right now is pretty depleted, and it's going to take a little while to get back to where it should be. And in the meantime, we can still eat better quality food and continue to grow ourselves economically and our families by taking advantage of this technology in the current climate where everybody's looking for good quality, healthy organic food.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much. We're going to go to Dr. Cannon.
Outstanding, y'all. Great conversation. We definitely can go in so many different directions with this conversation. And so many questions I have that comes to mind. And namely, I would ask first your thoughts, ladies and gentlemen, on into our guest, on how does, in your thoughts, how should we benefit from this new market of cannabis, this new market of legalization of marijuana across the country, when we as an Afro-American Negro people, we have an affinity with growing produce in this country, as you stated. We put millions of dollars in this economy through a crop that we planted and harvest for 200 years for free, and then many of our children have gone to jail for another crop, marijuana, for 30, 40, 50 years, filled the jail cells. As Afro-American people, how should we look at the legalization of marijuana? I know we all want to get as high and have a good time, but the economics behind it, what should we demand as a people? Should we only get our roads fixed? Should we get a fast track to the prison because we get caught driving under the influence? My thoughts would be we should demand 50% of the profit from anything that they legalized and sanctioned with cannabis and marijuana in it. We as a people should be able to, we shouldn't have to grow it. We shouldn't have to plant it. If anything, they should have to come to us to get their licensing, and we should be able to get 50% of the profit for 100 years of anything that has cannabis in it. That would be my suggestion. But I'm curious, as a whole, as a people, should we just be satisfied with the fact that we get an opportunity to grow it and we get an opportunity to participate in the economy of it from putting our hands in it and growing it and selling it? Or can we demand more from this new economy that they're legalizing right before our eyes, is my question.
Oh, Dr. Kevin, let me address that, please. We do not have access to this industry. They are systematically keeping us out of this industry. I have a friend who's a judge in Washington, D.C., in Maryland right now. She couldn't even get a license 2 years in a row. And she had a perfect application in every way, the best of the best she hired. She could not get a license. We need to demand that they give us a license for free for 400 years to grow as much as we can, as much as we want to sell. We're enterprising people. Now, we can go out and work as hard as anybody, harder, and make plenty of money. But we have to have access, first of all, and I don't think they're going to give us anything, you know. But if they gave us the opportunity to really have access, they at least owe us access. We can't even get access.
What
is it? It's systematically excluding black people from this industry, left and right. It's travesty.
What do you think would happen if we would march in the streets and we would fill the courtrooms because based on us being in slavery, we want to be the only people since they legalized it. Now that they legalized it, if we stepped in with a strong demand, like the Indian said, we want to only have the rights to casinos. Could we win if we say we only want to have the rights to, I don't want to say slang it, push it, but I'm saying control the economy of it or whatever. I mean, do we have any leverage to be able to do that is my question.
Dr. Cannon, so if I could, we definitely have enough leverage to get either disproportionate ownership, meaning, you know, we make up about 13-15% of the population. We can definitely get like more than that, or at the most, like ownership of most of it. I don't know if all of it, but definitely a disproportionate control or most of it. But I want to tell you, though, that we don't need to necessarily march in the street for this issue, because we've already, black people have already been taking this issue head on in a more political way. For example, some people may not know, Evanston is a town in a suburb of Chicago. And last month in March, actually, the city council voted 8-1 to actually begin making good on a pledge that they previously made to distribute $10 million over the next 10 years with the distribution of $400,000 to eligible black households. Qualifying household would receive about $25,000 for home repairs, down payments on properties, and interest or late penalties on the property. This town actually just recently voted on that old promise they made to pay reparations to black people using tax money from the sale of recreational marijuana. So this is actually already happening. We're using the fact that, you know, not only can this be used for reparations for white affirmative action policies that have negatively impacted our community from slavery and Jim Crow, but also the war on drugs, which we know was intentionally racialized. Right? We can use the money from the profits of this as a means of generating reparations and as demanding ownership of, you know, the control of some of this. But it's already happening for people in the audience listening who may not know. So there is a lot of hope, because this isn't just speculation or talk anymore about things we can do or should do. We're actually doing it. And like I said, that example that I just gave of Evanston, that suburb in Chicago, actually using tax money to pay reparations to black people in the city, is just one instance of that.
Well, young Michael, my question is, how do we get behind you as you push that initiative forward for the whole nation so that we don't get left behind? Because, I mean, how do we get behind you so that we can make sure this we get this across the finish line with you?
The best way, in my opinion, to expand this, because like I said, it's already happening, is to transition away from marching in the streets. I have nothing against that, but you have to use the right tool for the right job, right? When our problems were nails, we were using hammers, but our problems aren't all nails anymore. Some of them require a little bit more finesse. Some of them are nuts and bolts you have to twist and turn. And so now we should transition away from marching to pooling our money together into PACs to influence state and local politicians to do things like this, like take up votes on reparations at the state and local level regarding marijuana, saying, hey, this it was intentionally set up to disproportionately negatively impact us, the criminalization of marijuana. We're going to get reparations for that. And, you know, our state and local politicians, we make up the majority of your constituency. You need to get elected. Here's what we want you to vote on. And it's, you know, said reparation bills relating to ownership of marijuana and taxation of the profits from marijuana for reparations, as well as the second part we need to do, transitioning away from marching. Like I said before, going to these corporations and saying, hey, we are the intermediaries between Africa and America. If you want favor on the African continent, you're going to have to go through us. And in order to get our good reviews, so to speak, because we definitely know you corporations want the minerals and resources and the labor pool of Africa, in order to get our good reviews, you're going to have to do some things for us, some quid pro quo. Number one, when it comes to business on the continent, those Africans are going to own and control the land and own and control the resources. You're not going to own that. Two, there is no slave labor in Africa, and that won't be tolerated. Three, you're going to pay your taxes on the continent. You're not going to try to evade taxes, but you can profit as much as you want from the minerals and resources you extract from the continent lawfully. And after that, the mandate here is you have to put money towards our reparations efforts. You have to put money behind the politicians, as we're already doing, to get them to vote on reparations measures like, you know, relating to cannabis, using those profits to pay black people for the damage that white affirmative action and white privilege policies have caused us. That's what we should be doing. We should be doing that, buying out our state and local officials by putting our money together in a super PAC and getting them to vote on these reparations type issues, and then going to the corporations and telling them of our position as intermediaries between Africa and America and getting them to use their money to by politicians in favor of our efforts as well.
I'll take one step further. We should be in Africa and then to learn to enter this cannabis market, whether it's
absolutely
or medical marijuana. There's a lot of African nations are behind the reforms in the industry, and it's still illegal or thought of as illegal in a lot of African countries, but they're starting to come around. And as they come online, opportunities that are going to be taken advantage of over there to grow will be taken over by people from, you know, rich, affluent
China
growers from European countries and from America who are already in the industry. We need to find a way to get into this situation and set ourselves as growers over there and teach our own people how to grow, that it never has to be another repeat of the same old situation over and over again where we are asking for something from somebody else. We own the means of production.
That's absolutely right, Mr. Harden. You reminded me of what is arguably the most important step of this, actually. I forgot to mention, so thank you. The outreach to Africa, obviously, if we're going to be the intermediaries, that means we already have to have had a relationship established with the continent. We need to use more media like this to try as best we can to get Africans on the program like this. We want to talk to Africans doing things in Africa and connect with them. Say, hey, we're Africans in America. You're Africans on the continent. Come on the show. Let's talk about these things. You can organize. And yeah, that's the most important point, I think, is the one you just mentioned, Mr. Harden. So thank you. We need to bring Africans on shows like this and say, hey, we're telling you that these companies are companies that we think you should do business with, and these are ones that we think you shouldn't, because these ones, like I said, have agreed to leave the ownership alone. Africans are going to retain ownership of those resources on the continent. They're also agreed to pay their taxes, and they also agree to help us with reparations here so that we can, you know, improve our condition here in order to help you guys back on the continent. So you're absolutely right, Mr. Harden. That outreach to Africans to have conversations with them and bring them on shows like this to help us coordinate globally is the most important point.
David, we can convince Dr. D to invite some Africans onto a show about agriculture and collaborating with African Americans in the future.
We need more continental Africans on the show.
Indeed.
Sounds like a plan to me. Sounds great. Dr. Cannon, you have more, or you want to wrap it up, your final comment?
Well, you know, we said something very powerfully, and again, so many different directions that we can go in on this conversation, from eating right, the right foods, to, you know, being cautious on what we told from other people that have conflict of interests about what they sell to us, what they give to us. We look at the money that's made in the medical industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the cannabis industry. And, you know, money is the root. The love of money is the root to all evil. That's what they say in the Bible. I think kind of backs that up as well. I guess my question is, and I don't know how much time we have, and we might have to table it for another conversation, is the part of the industry where once a person's body breaks down and they're on their way out of here, and they find themselves that their body parts and their organs are still strong and functional, the realistic possibilities that are more that these the industries and the powers that be, the realistic possibility that they put those bodies in the ground with those organs in the ground, or with a million-billion-dollar industry, organ industry. I guess the question that I'm asking is, we know that health is important and doing all the right things to stay healthy, but to be able to talk just for a second on the money that's made up under, or the conflict of interest when it comes to our body parts and our organs that we think they put into the ground, and they may not be put into the ground. They may be used or sold, or I'm just curious if there's any understanding on that subject of what happens with our bodies and our body parts and the industry, the money-making industry that makes a lot of our doctors even suspect when it comes to the underground where our organs can be, you know, sold or marketed. I'm curious of the realistic conversation that's wrapped around that subject as well.
Mr. Hardy?
I mean, to me, it's another situation where we have to take control of our communities and take control of our lives, our food, and take control of our dead. I mean, we all have our own cemeteries in our own communities. Nobody better not come up in there talking about digging somebody up. Now we've lost that. We have to take control of our own communities and it will solve most of our problems.
Thank you so very much.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
You know, absolutely. I don't know a lot about, you know, I think that's very powerful. I know it was the time we were burying our dead in our cemeteries and our church lots, and, you know, we did have some control. But the control is taken right out of our hands immediately as our loved ones pass and we turn them over to people, you know, and it's a sad situation that strange people you never met, never seen, never checked. you know, identities and credentials, and yet at that point you have to turn your loved one that you've known all your life into the hands of strangers, trusting that they're going to do the right thing. We come into this life and we leave out of this life, and that's an interesting conversation for sure. And that's why I guess a very important conversation. A young kid asks, where do you go when you die? And that leads us into even more spiritual conversation where, you know, the Bible teaches that there is life after death and that there's a wonderful plan prepared for those that understand that, that subscribe to Christ as their Savior and the teachings of the Bible. You know, we have to take control of our life almost from the time that, life is given to us. The sperm start running, you know, we get here. And then after that, you know, if you don't control your life, somebody else is going to control it. If you don't take control, then you'll be following somebody else's plan. You know,
right.
Some families do that. We let our families be led astray and led in many different directions because there's no leader to pull the family together. I appreciate this show tonight, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a good show, Dr. Lee.
Thank you so very much, and I appreciate you as well. And I totally agree that it is time for us to take control over our lives from conception and in our communities, our families, and friends. I mean, it's what we have to do as a people. They're not going to give it to us. Totally agree on the super PACs, ready to get it all going. In fact, I mean, we are through these conversations, and we are having conversations, you know, with our African sisters and brothers and families in Africa, and we're going to bring these conversations together very, very, very soon. So we're going to go to Michael, and then after Michael, then we're going to ask Mr. Hardy to address any further questions or comments, if need be, by Michael, and Mr. Harding's voice will be the last we hear.
So this has been an exceptionally informative and substantive conversation. Firstly, I want to thank Mr. Harding for coming on and sharing so much of his knowledge and expertise with us. This conversation is one that I'm sure many people in the listening audience appreciate very much and might actually want to come back to and listen later. Personally, I am very thankful for Mr. Harden coming here and sharing a lot of things with us, in particular me, that I wasn't aware of, like the accessibility, the ease, and the capability of aquaponics, farming basically indoors, even in your own house with a fish tank. So I definitely appreciate that knowledge. That knowledge is going to go very far with a lot of people, I feel. And I think I definitely know what you're doing, Mr. Harden, is a part of stimulating this global African revolution that a lot of people, you know, kind of feel coming and we're on the cusp of. So I thank you for being one of the, I guess in time, historically, we could call you a forefather of this revolution to come. Being one of the ones sharing this vital information and leading us into this new age. So thank you a lot for that and coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Well, young man, I really appreciate you and your generation taking such a proactive path towards beginning control of our destiny and our community, and not just here, but globally. You know, it's going to have to be a global movement to be effective. Our power base will once again be Africa, and we can help to cultivate the whole resurgence of African power through our connections with the American economy. So I think we have a lot of opportunity to do that here. I certainly hope we take advantage of it on every level. And if you guys want to see some systems and some examples of the possibilities of my company, RST Bioscience, it's an Instagram page. You can go there and look at some of the stuff that we've done, some of the things that you could do. And we'd be happy to, you know, reach out to help in any way we can to any community in the diaspora or in the continent.
Thank you so very much, Mr. Harding. I do appreciate your coming on. And it's been a very informative evening. And I know that there's just like so much, much, much more. And we will have more of these conversations. And we do, again, invite our listening audience to go to, is it rstbioscience.com? And also to your Instagram page, is that correct?
Yeah, the Instagram page is RST Bioscience. And you can also, our website is rsustainabletech.com. The letter R, sustainabletech.com.
Okay, thank you so very much. And we're here for a change. I want to extend our listening audience a thank you and welcome back next week. And we're just going to continue to talk and plan, you know, not just talk. We are about doing business. Thank you. I appreciate you all. I love you. And until next week, God bless you so much. And stay well and stay safe.
Today because yeah. Police brutality, governor who stands strong, doing our casualties, holding each other up. Yeah.